This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network, and you're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution-Free Radio. Joining us today is Tony Clark from Polaris Institute. Good day, Tony.
Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just so happy to have the opportunity to speak with you because truly, in my estimation of the tar sands battle, your group is really, really, really high up there as far as those that are seeking to stop tar sands from, you know, wrecking our planet. Wonderful.
Well, there are a lot of groups involved on both sides of the border, and it's going to take a real coalition and a very strong coalition to bring about that change. But this is the moment, and we're engaged in it, and so are many others.
That sounds so cool, you know. The Polaris Institute makes it very clear that its goal is to stop the tar sands exploitation. Why does Polaris Institute take up the sword of this battle?
Well, the answer to that can be very long and drawn out, but let me just point out that it relates to some history in this country. I personally was involved in a major battle that took place 30 years ago against something called the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline, which was designed to bring natural gas from the Beaufort Sea down into southern Canada and particularly for export to the United States. And that particular pipeline went through First Nations territory or the territory of Indigenous peoples, and there was a major resistance and uprising against that. Mainly because of the model of development and the way in which it was being pursued, and also the whole question of whether we really needed to have that natural gas in southern Canada and for export to the United States. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, we were successful in stopping that from occurring back 30 years ago. Now, fast wind ourselves to the present time, and the tar sands mega development that is taking place is something that is much, much more horrendous in terms of its total impact than we experienced with the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline. In other words, the tar sands has huge implications environmentally, economically, socially, and certainly in terms of our energy future, it has major implications. So, we began to take a look at this. We began to examine the issues. We started actually in 2004, 2005 to try to get a handle on this, to try to understand what was really happening. And we came to the conclusion that this was going to be a major mega development that needed full-scale attention, and that we had to start not only doing our homework on this, but building the capacity to develop and work a campaign within our own organization, but to do so in collaboration with many other organizations on both sides of the border. And that's the work that has taken place over the last few years, which has brought us to the point where we are now.
Okay. I've been on your website, and I noticed that you describe a big part of what you do as retooling movements. Can you speak to that?
Well, originally, our original conception around this, Don, really had to do with the fact that experienced, and in fact, Polaris came into being because we realized that coming out of the free trade battles in this country between Canada and the United States, that really it wasn't governments that were shaping public policy so much as it was transnational corporations that were shaping public policy, and so that it became really important to start to work with other organizations and social movements and community groups to help organizations rethink their strategies in ways that they can take on corporations as targets and not just be exclusively focused in on trying to change government policy alone.
Okay.
So that was one shift that took place. The second one had to do with really helping groups and ourselves to not only go on the defensive, which is always something that we seem to be doing these days, constantly on the defensive, but to start to go on the offensive. And I think this is something that we have tried to work with in terms of the tar sands work, not only concentrating on on trying to curb or slow down or stop the tar sands, the mega tar sands machine, but also to turn that corner, which is absolutely crucial these days, of transforming the economy itself from the kind of industrial model that we have now to a green economy for the future.
Well, it's so good to hear you talking in this kind of like this big picture. It's very kind of focused on these very critical elements of what needs to be done in this big picture. What are a couple of the top things that the Polaris Institute is doing currently to stop tar sands?
Well, what we've done is to break the tar sands down into a number of different issues that become issues that speak to different constituencies at different points of time. So that, for example, obviously we've seen the tar sands as Canada's number one global warming machine. Obviously, it gives off a huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions, three times that of conventional oil production. And so there is a whole reason to try to slow down or stop the tar sands just on that basis alone. So the greenhouse gas effect is one major set of issues and one of the things we organize around. A second would be the kind of boreal forest destruction that is taking place. And one of the reasons for that is that we are getting rid of nature's own way of dealing with carbon, its own carbon sink, by destroying the boreal forests up there, or at least a good chunk of the boreal forests, and therefore taking away the capacity of nature to absorb carbon emissions. Thirdly, we've worked at this from the standpoint of water. Polaris has done a lot of work on water issues over the years, and the impact of what is happening in the tar sands in terms of water depletion and water contamination has become a major piece of work that we have taken on with Polaris. And today, for example, just to give you an example of an action, today in collaboration with five other groups, we have launched a document called Watered Down, which goes after the federal government for its failure to act in terms of the crisis of water depletion and water contamination that is taking place in the tar sands today. We're also working very closely with First Nations and Indigenous peoples. This is, after all, historically and traditionally their land. It was fraudulently taken from them through forged signatures on treaties and back over a century ago. And this is something that continues to be a major issue for us in terms of the land itself and the fact that that's really owned and traditionally owned anyway, and the First Nations and Indigenous peoples have rights to that land, which are not being honored by the way in which things are proceeding. We've been also looking at other issues like the impact on the economy, because what's happened is that the tar sands has moved into the very center of the Canadian economy. It is a driving force behind the Canadian economy today. And what goes on in the tar sands also has negative impacts in terms of manufacturing job losses in Canada, simply because in order to be able to sell our manufactured products into the U.S. market, what happens is that the value of the Canadian dollar is so closely tied to the price of oil that the price of oil, as it continues to go up, has a negative effect on our ability to sell competitively our manufactured products into the U.S. market. And so this is another factor. We've been working with unions on this and working with workers in different communities in southwestern Ontario to address this issue. We've also been addressing the environmental health issues that occur elsewhere in the country. Not only is the tar sands having a huge impact in terms of environmental health in places like Fort Chipewyan and those Native and First Nations communities that exist in the around the tar sands area, but it also, because of the crude oil being shipped across the country, piped across the country to refineries in places like Sarnia and Windsor, as well as in Detroit across the river, that whole area is like Cancer Alley, and there is a huge problem in terms of thyroid cancer in some of those communities and respiratory diseases, et cetera. So these are issues, too, that we've been working on as well.
So tell me this. How would I go about digging deeper into what you guys know about the refinery angle of this? Because that's what we're trying to work on. You know, the increases in toxics being emitted, the additional cancer risk burden that's being imposed by the refining of the tar sands here amongst where these, you know, these, say, New Yorkers and Ontario people and, you know, people in the Great Lakes Basin truly are breathing and living.
Well, this is it. I mean, they're all throughout the Great Lakes. There are a number of refineries that are close to the Great Lakes. This exists in Indiana. It exists in Illinois and in Michigan. The refinery that I'm somewhat familiar with, more on a firsthand basis, is the Marathon Refinery, which is located in Detroit, and certainly the operations there are there's a huge problem of division of community that has taken place there. People of color and you know, the problems of environmental racism are quite deeply entrenched, I think, there. Similar kinds of things have happened across the border in Canada, here in Sarnia, where you have refineries that are located in a community that was originally an Indigenous peoples community, and again, the refineries are built around the First Nations community area, and a really clear example of environmental racism taking place there as well. So we do, I mean, these, we can learn a lot from what's happened in the U.S. around these issues, and vice versa. I think people can learn from what's happening also in Canada, and we can start to build a greater awareness of this and to build greater bonds of solidarity to address these issues. But there's no question that these refineries, as far as the tar sands is concerned, it's just in the case of the Marathon Refinery in Detroit and the one and the ones in Sarnia, these refineries are being upgraded now so that they can take tar sands crude and refine it. And that requires new technologies being put in place to do this, and that is exactly what's happening in both those refineries, both those sets of places right now, both in Detroit and in Sarnia at the present moment. Those refineries are being upgraded to take tar sands crude.
Okay.
And, of course, that means that the emissions from that are going to add to the emissions that already exist, but they're going to bring a more potent substance and more toxic substances into the atmosphere as a result of refining tar sands crude itself.
Well, that's very, you know, something that I'm certain that our group will want to focus a lot on. See, we looked at this. It was an air toxics inventory that was released by the Great Lakes Commission, and it just made this very clear case that there was too much benzene, there was too much PAHs, there was too much of these cancer-causing air pollutants in the region, you know, the air supply of the Great Lakes Basin. And then we saw these proposals to upgrade. And we thought that was a great hook, you know, that inventory, you know, this emissions inventory. But we tried to get the media into that, and they just, you know, they didn't consider that to be, you know, a close enough connection, you know, bringing up this matter of the refinery expansions to deal with the tar sands and this air toxic inventory that was painting this really concern-raising picture as considering the amount of toxics that are here now without this extra huge input from, you know, tar sands refining at these expanded refineries. So, you know, we're just going to keep hammering it, I guess. They'll have to listen sooner or later.
Well, that experience was the case, too, in places like Windsor and in Sarnia, too. The media has just sort of blacked out on this. But very recently, when we were in Windsor doing a round table with community leaders, and several of the spokespersons that were a part of that round table were addressing the cancer impacts, and they got quite a bit of attention. So maybe there's a bit of a turning taking place here, and maybe the media's going to start to become more sensitive and aware of these issues.
So is the Windsor community also a place where there are refineries?
No, but it is affected by the refinery, the Marathon refinery across the river in Detroit.
Okay.
And that affects Windsor. And also the people that were speaking out on this were very familiar with what is happening in Sarnia. So they were talking in generally in a regional way about the three areas, Detroit and Sarnia and Windsor.
Okay. You've written a book titled Tar Sands Showdown. That sounds so exciting to me. It just seems like, truly in my estimation, this Tar Sands Showdown is going to be the biggest environmental event of our probably lifetimes, and you know, maybe the next, you know, 1,000 years or who knows what. But still, it's a really, really big deal. Tell us about that book, Tony.
Well, the book came out in the latter part of last year, about a year ago, in other words, it really was meant to convey several messages. One, that in this country, at least, the tar sands is had been viewed until fairly recently, over the last year or so, really as something that is an Alberta issue. It's an issue that is really contained by what happens in Alberta, in the province of Alberta. The book attempts to show that this is a national and a binational issue at the very least. And for that matter, it's really a global and international issue as well. So that's the first thing we wanted to get through, and the message we wanted to get through. And secondly, we wanted to get through the message that as important and as critical as the environmental issues are, and for that matter, the environmental, social, and environmental health issues are, in terms of the impact of the tar sands, it's also a very vital issue from an economic standpoint, and that we need to understand the extent to which, as I indicated before, that the tar sands has and the mega development that's going on there is really has moved into the very center of the Canadian economy and is driving the Canadian economy. And in many ways, it's like it's already has been sort of compared with historically with the building of the Canadian Pacific Railway across the country, which was a massive undertaking that was a part of nation building very much in the early stages of Canada's history. And so the tar sands really is of that magnitude in many ways, and it's got enormous implications. And so that we need to look at it as not just an environmental issue and a social issue, as important as those aspects are. We also need to look at it as an economic issue that has enormous political implications as well.
I did have this question in, you know, with the questions that I submitted to you, but I'd like to ask you, as you know, kind of like in the flow of what we're talking about here, can you just give us a kind of condensed version of where the money goes? You know, how does the money, you know, say with tar sands, you know, exploitation, how does that, you know, not benefit your economy in the ways that selling manufactured products to other markets benefits your country?
Well, there are many ways probably of doing that, but let me just give you, I mean, in terms of a basic sort of economics thing, we just, essentially what happens is that the bitumen that is taken out of the ground is, instead of that being refined here in Canada, it's refined in the United States completely, so that we take the bitumen out of the ground and in its raw state, we ship it to the U.S. and then it becomes refined there. So if you were looking at basic economics of the need, if you're going to develop a resource, you're in much better shape economically if you can manufacture that resource and then sell it to another country or export it to another country. But what we're doing here is being true to our tradition of being hewers of wood and drawers of water by simply shipping it in its almost its natural state, right to the U.S. to be refined, and then marketed from there. So that's one example of this. But you know, even more so, I mean, even when we look at it from another aspect, what are we doing to our own economy to produce this crude, this tar sands crude and bitumen? What we're doing is using up most of the natural gas that we have in this country, which is, by the way, Canadians for the most part use natural gas to heat their homes, and you know, we're in the northern climate here,
right.
And you know, having the energy to heat our homes is a crucial factor of existence in this country. But heating our homes and running our businesses is largely done by natural gas, yet the tar sands uses every day half the amount of natural gas that is used to heat the homes of people in this country. So you can imagine what happens when we draw down on our conventional supplies of natural gas to the point where we have less than 8 years of natural gas or conventional supplies of natural gas left in the country. You know, what kind of a danger we're putting ourselves in at that point. Or another example is that because we no longer have what we call a national energy policy and strategy in this country, what's happened is in an era of free trade and the North American Free Trade Agreement between Canada and the United States, it means that we are obligated to export our oil and natural gas to the United States at the same rate as the average of the previous 3 years. So this is all built into the proportional sharing and agreement of NAFTA and the free trade agreements between our two countries. So as a result, what happens is that most of our production in oil and in natural gas is exported to the United States directly. And at the same time, 40% of the population in this country, four provinces being the four Atlantic provinces and Quebec and parts of Ontario, depend upon foreign imports of oil from the Middle East, namely Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Algeria. So 40% of the population of the country depends upon imports from the Middle East, while we produce our oil and our gas here to ship to the United States. Mm. So you can see what a kind of a distortion that is with regards to, you know, if you had a policy whereby you met your own needs first and then sold to external markets, that would make sense. But we no longer have that kind of policy and that kind of strategy in this country.
And Canadians aren't, you know, making some great windfall of, you know, income out of the tar sands. Is that the case too?
Well, yes. I mean, the elites, the economic little elites of the country certainly are making windfall profits from the rapid extraction and sale of the raw product. Yeah, the raw resource. There's no question
about
that.
The people don't get any of this. The Canadian people.
No, I mean, what it is, it's trickle-up economics, not trickle-down economics.
Sounds all terribly awful and crazy. You know, I guess it's because the bad kings are in power. You know,
and that's why, you know, we have to use this as an occasion not just to mobilize resistance against all of this, but we have to use this as an occasion and an opportunity in a moment where we need to transform the economy as a whole. And that's why, as you know, in the United States, at least there has been an effort to start making a move in the direction of a clean energy economy in the U.S. We've got to do the same here, and that provides an opportunity not just to produce a clean energy economy, or a green economy in general, but to really transform the economic model at the same time. So that's really I think the challenge that's in front of us today is to be able to use this as an occasion, not just to resist and stop and slow down or whatever the tar sands, but to look at its model of development and say, look, we have to come up with a new model of industrial and resource development, and that means developing a transition to a new economy and a new economic model.
That sounds like the way we got to go. What can the average Canadian, the average American, what can just the basic people, what can they do to bring an end to this awful tar sands exploitation?
Well, first of all, I think that the obvious one is that people need to become aware of the issues and to pick those particular issues that make most sense to them. If climate change and greenhouse gases and all that sort of stuff is an issue that really touches you, then that's one angle. But there are many other angles to take on this. Anyway, the point being is to educate and to become aware of the issues. Secondly, I think to be aware of whether or not there's infrastructure that is built or nearby one's community such as refineries, such as pipelines, such as upgraders, and those kinds of facilities, which are in one way or another take tar sands crude and are a part of the production and marketing of tar sands crude, and so that I think when one looks at the map of pipelines and refineries and so forth that are associated with tar sands crude, it at least opens up opportunities for people to act locally around those kinds of issues and become involved. It's really important, I think, to become engaged too with the variety of different groups in the U.S. today that are really working on this issue. I mean, the Sierra Club, the Natural Resource Defense Council, Greenpeace, various other. There's a variety of other organizations. Depending on where one is, too, there's a number of Indigenous Peoples organizations associated with the Indigenous Environment Network in the U.S. And all these groups are directly involved in one way or another in the tar sands campaign. And so it would be important for people who are either a part of those organizations or want to be a part of those organizations to join in that way and become involved. And then, you know, you can just go to certain websites where there are, you know, e-blasts and action opportunities which provide one with an indication of things that can be done right away. For example, and I'm only just referring to our own example, but at our website, tarsandswatch.org, there's an e-blast up there today which provides an opportunity for people to send a letter to our own government for its failure to prepare for Copenhagen in a way that addresses the real challenges of the tar sands. So there's those kinds of things that are happening out there, and I think those e-blasts and those kinds of action opportunities that are afforded on different websites provide an opportunity for people to become directly involved.
That sounds all really great. I noticed a thing on the UNEP website where they were encouraging Canadians to make these YouTubes or these little brief films, which would show how Canadians what they were doing to be green and to protect the earth. And I'm just thinking, it sure be cool if a bunch of those kids made these Stop Tar Sands, YouTubes or something, to kind of like show that they weren't kind of easily going to, just trying to take these others kind of less, less controversial and less significant and less powerful, means of describing their, their pollution control activities, because certainly tar sands is this huge thing that people need to do. And, getting those kids just to make a bunch of, videos about cleaning products, green cleaning products, certainly I don't think will be as good for the planet as they were doing something along the lines of what you guys are doing with TerraSense.
Well, I could say, Don, that it is encouraging to note that that the youth movements in both our countries are beginning to become more aware of the tar sands as a huge, what we call a mega juggernaut
in the
face of dealing with things like climate change and global warming. And the Power Shift conference that took place a number of months ago in Washington was also followed up here with one in Ottawa. And the tar sands issues were pretty prominent. So
sure.
I think we're seeing something grow and develop, and we hopefully we'll see more of it expand in the future.
So you've already almost answered this question. If you want to give me a little more, I'll ask it to you. Is a Stop Tar Sands movement taking shape in Canada and the U.S.?
Yeah, it is. It is through some of those organizations I mentioned a moment ago. There are something like somewhere between 20 and 25 organizations that are working very closely together on both sides of the border to build awareness around these issues and to mobilize action on them. And this kind of collaboration, I think, is really somewhat unprecedented, certainly over a sustained period of time. And this is what will be necessary for this, because you cannot possibly expect to stop something like this overnight. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of time, and it's going to take mobilization on both sides of the border. And I think that this is happening, and the kind of collaboration that is going on is quite remarkable in terms of what we call binational campaign activity.
Well, it all sounds like it's going higher, and that we'll stop these tar sands sooner or later, you know.
Well, I certainly hope so. In many ways, the future of this continent and this continent's contribution to the planet is going to be dramatically affected by whichever way we go with regards to what happens on the tar sands.
Okay, that sounds like a good point to have this particular moment in fighting those awful tar sands come to an end. I'd like to thank you for all your good work and all your good ideas and your good voice here. Tony, it's been a great interview.
Thank you, Don. It's good to talk with you, and I'm glad we finally made it happen after you're trying so hard for the last number of months. So appreciate your patience.
Well, have a great day here, Tony. It's just been a great time talking with you. Good luck with all you're doing.
Okay, and you too.
Yep.
Bye now.
Yep, bye.